Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle. We're still here on Radio Row in the Super Bowl Media Center in San Francisco. Jeff Rimebold and Neil Reynolds here. We're not quite set up on our set, but we wanted to get this special guest with us today, Allen Robinson of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Allen, thank you for joining us, and we enjoyed watching you for sure this season.
Thank you, I appreciate it, and thanks for having me.
And what about that Jags season? Because what a game at Wembley Stadium you guys had against the Buffalo Bills, and it seemed like you, certainly offensively, you turned a corner and certainly would have high hopes for 2016.
Yeah, for sure. Our hopes for 2016 are definitely that we really have to continue to ascend. You know, I think this year we use it as a building block and a foundation for us, you know, and we see the level that we can play at, you know, so our expectations are even more higher next year.
What about that combination? Blake Bortles and this young man right here, the hottest young quarterback receiver duo in the National Football League.
You know, for us, you know, I think we were in a real unique situation. Both being drafted into the same class, you know, really given the opportunity, you know, to be full time starters as a rookie. You know, I think a lot of guys don't have that opportunity. You know, so for us, we just continue to put the work in from the time that we stepped on the field together, and then in the off season, and then into the season this past year.
Now, Allen, I was very glad to see you make the Pro Bowl this year. I went on a bit of a Twitter rant when you didn't get in originally because I thought, how could this guy not be in? 80 catches, 1,400 yards, 14 touchdowns. Tell us about your game from year one to year two, because I watched you in, and Jeff will tell you, on this podcast, I was talking to Jeff about what I saw from you in minicamp, just dominating, especially in the red zone. What changed from year one to year two for you?
For me, I think it just slowed down a lot. And also, I think... last year in the offseason, I really wanted to get stronger and faster, and I was able to do that, you know. And I also, so I think that really was a testament, you know, to some of the down and field plays that I was able to make this year.
You know, your football team, you've gone through that transition, struggled. They've stuck with your head coach. You guys are doing a great job, moving in the right direction. How do you feel now? Is the future as bright in Jacksonville as we think it is?
Oh, for sure. You know, so. I think for us, you know, we have higher expectations than anyone else has for us, you know. So I think we got to just continue to ascend, continue to put the work in, you know. And I think now, you know, by us being such a young team, you know, we really have that hunger to take it to the next level.
What's it like to play for Gus Bradley? We look at him, he seems to have that energy.
It's awesome, man. You know, Coach Bradley brings that energy each and every single day, you know. And also for him, you know, always keeping such a positive attitude throughout the locker room and around the facility at all times.
We're looking ahead to Super Bowl 50, of course, on Sunday, Denver against Carolina. You played against the Panthers earlier in the year, so you faced Josh Norman. Does he talk as much on the field as he does in the media?
Yeah. Yeah, he does, man. If you'll let him get in his head, I mean, if you'll let him get in your head, he sure will, you know. But, I mean, they have a tenacious defense, you know. So for them, for Denver, you know, I think Denver's prepared, though, man. They have a lot of good weapons on offense, you know. So I really think that Denver could put up a challenge for Carolina.
Now, because Carolina doesn't flip Norman around, he's going to play on one side of the field. McClain on the other side, is he the guy that they have to go after?
I would say, yeah, you probably have a better chance, you know, going at him. But at the same time, I think as a team, you have to really stick to what you do well. You know, you really can't try to overthink it and things like that. You know, you got to really just go with your flow and go with what's got you here.
So which receivers should we be looking out for? Is there a receiver in Super Bowl 50 that you are looking to have a big impact, somebody you enjoy watching?
Demaryius Thomas. You know, I think he's always a matchup nightmare. You know, and even for myself, you know, when I get a chance watching him in the offseason and things like that, you know, but I think he really could present a matchup problem for Carolina.
And big receivers like Demaryius, like Calvin Johnson, like yourself, you don't always have to be open, right?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. Just throw it up to him. I know DT has made some crazy catches this year by just Peyton and Brock just throwing it up to him.
Now, when you look at the other side of the ball, right, and you think about Carolina's receivers, how much has Cam brought along guys like Corey Brown, Ted Ginn,
yeah.
Those kind of guys? You know, you hear Ted Ginn say, he made me. How does a quarterback make a receiver?
You know, by just giving him opportunities. And, you know, for Cam, you know, he really has a unique ability to extend the play, you know, so and things like that, you know. But also at the same time, you know, Carolina's going up against one of the best, if not the best, you know, secondary in the league, you know, with Aqib Talib and with Chris Harris and TJ Ward, you know. So I mean the Broncos secondary as well is lights out.
All right, we're going to put you on the spot a little bit now, all right? Who are you picking in the game?
Broncos 24-19.
All right.
Wow, there you go. All right, so that's Allen Robinson. So glad he made it to the Pro Bowl. Deserved. Look forward to seeing you again at Wembley Stadium in 2016. And we are looking ahead to Super Bowl 50 on Sky Sports this Sunday. It's on Sky Sports 1 and Sky Sports 3. The action from Levi's Stadium begins at 10 p.m. It's the Denver Broncos against the Carolina Panthers. Well, this place got busy in a hurry. Here we are on Radio Row in the Super Bowl Media Center. I think it's got busy because we've been joined by not a one-time Super Bowl champion, not a two-time, not three, but four times. Jesse Sapulu, the great center for the San Francisco 49ers. Thanks for joining us. And what's it like to have a Super Bowl right here in San Francisco?
Well, it's awesome. I mean, the last time we had it here was at Stanford University, and that was my first Super Bowl. So we were hoping that history could repeat itself, but unfortunately, we got to watch the Carolina Panthers and the Denver Broncos, two of the best teams this year, go at it.
Now, I'm glad you brought up Super Bowl 19 because I was a young boy back in the UK, Dan Marino posters all over the wall. So I'd just like to say thanks very much, Jesse.
Well, you know, Dan Marino that year threw for 5,000 yards. And coach knows that the way defenses were back then, if you throw for 5,000 yards, that's like 7,000 yards today. So that was a record-breaking offense, and we were fortunate to take the game away from them.
Jesse, how you talk about the game changing. In your opinion, as you watch the game now, how has the game changed from your day?
Well, obviously, you know, I say there's a lot of rats that are running around with no cats. You know, I joke about it with Ronnie Lott and some of those guys. I told Ronnie, you'll be broke if you play today.
Couldn't play in this game.
Right. It's just the way the game is. I think it's a safety issue. So the numbers, you know, and the generations can't be compared, in my opinion.
Right.
What's it like when you get back around this, see all the 49ers jerseys all behind us here on Radio Row? Do you still get that? I interviewed Joe Montana once when he was over in London when the 49ers were playing, and he said, if they could give me a magic pill so I could play one more game. Do you ever get that, if I could just go one more game, or are you quite content in retirement?
I'll play one more game if number 16 is walking through that door. But I think with Joe is that his kids really didn't get the full impact of his career. And, you know, my two older kids kind of understood what was going on, but at that particular time, you know, now that we're older, we wish we could sit back and appreciate it a little bit better.
You know, Jesse told me a great story. We were standing before the show came on. I said, Jesse, now tell me the truth. That last drive against Cincinnati, Joe Montana actually look up and go, hey, is that John Candy? And he said, yep. And I said, what do you think? He goes, I said, get the bus warm, because if he can see that, we're going to take this ball right down in the end zone.
And that does sum up. I mean, they called him Joe Cool. Was he really like that in the huddle time after time?
He really was. And it's something that you almost can't teach. And we were sharing that story about John Candy. It was a timeout. We still had 89 yards to go. And, you know, the timeout was a little extra long, and he was able to see through the huddle and recognize John Candy in the moment. Well, we were all thinking. I was just thinking, Jesse, you better not hold, because the whole Samoan community and the whole Polynesian community will know in this particular drive you cost them the game. But with Joe, if he was Joe Cool, we felt pretty good as a huddle that we were going to get it done.
And I guess, Joe, and all of you, you know, you got used to being in Super Bowls. This 49ers team was so good. And as we look ahead to Super Bowl 50, we see Peyton Manning playing in his fourth. But Cam Newton, it's his first Super Bowl. So did it get easier the more you played in this big game, or was it always a challenge?
Well, I think for these two particular quarterbacks, it's a little different. You know, Peyton's legacy is kind of on the line. You know, he's a great, great quarterback. But when you're talking about comparing greats of all time, this is the game that defines you.
Right.
You know, Cam Newton, well, you talk about Dan Marino, right? And Dan told me over the years that he thought he would make a couple more trips to the Super Bowl. Never seen the Super Bowl again, so you better take advantage of your opportunities.
Yeah, you
Jesse,
never know.
As a lineman, the game's always going to be, has always been, and always will be, one up front where the big boys play. You look at these two teams, two great defensive lines. Talk to us about the offensive lines as you evaluate them.
Well, I think the Carolina offensive line has been together more. They got a guy in the middle that runs the other four guys that's an all-pro in Matt Khalil. We got the kid that came over from the Ravens,
or
that solidified that group. You know, they identify offensive lines as a team within the team. There's a reason why people say that.
Yeah.
You have to be a close-knit group. You know, sometimes you can't hear the snap count. You can't hear your calls. But it's eye contact that makes you know what the other person's thinking. And that's what makes those lines special.
And with that then, bearing that in mind, how important is continuity? Because Carolina's offensive line has managed to stay together pretty much all season. And we hear people talk about, you know, New England chopped and changed and that wasn't ideal. How important is continuity along that front?
Very, very important. Yeah. That's why the 49ers aren't here. And sooner or later, it's going to catch up to New England. You know, they have to be able to run the ball. And to run the ball is the guys up front. And Brady can only carry them to a certain amount of, deep into the playoffs. And you knew it was going to catch up with them, and that's why they're not here today.
Jess, when you watch Denver and they run that zone scheme, which you guys under Ladd McKittrick, that was really, you were really the first team to really perfect zone blocking out here. Can they run the ball? Are they going to be able to? Because I think they need to run the football to win the game.
I think so, too. I think both defenses are pretty good. I think the Denver defense and the Carolina offense is going to be a battle. But I think the difference in this game is the Carolina defense might be a little bit better than the Denver offense.
Well, actually, defense is an important part. Going back to Super Bowl 19, it was all about Dan Marino and Joe Montana, and the 49ers defense was one of the best in the NFL at that time as well, wasn't it?
Well, I played in some of the best offenses of all time. I won 4 Super Bowls, but I lost 4 NFC Championship games. And the reason is we didn't have a defense. You know, we can't keep outscoring people all the time. The years we won it is because our defense were ranked in the top 5.
Wow,
you could have a good combination.
You could have won 8 Super Bowls then.
Realistically, I could have won 6.
Wow.
Of those 4 that you did win, do you love them all equally like your children? Or is there one that really stands out as, you know, that was pretty special?
Well, I appreciate it a lot more now. But unfortunately, the reality of the situation is the 4 NFC Championship games I lost stings a whole lot more.
Wow.
You know, but, you know, of course, people are proud of our 5 Super Bowls. And it's one of those deals. That's just part of the game.
You know what, Jesse? Take me back now and explain to me how you came out of the University of Hawaii. Dwight Clark out of Clemson wasn't a really highly thought of guy coming out of Clemson. Montana was drafted. He didn't start even some of the games as a senior in college, was drafted down the line a little bit, wasn't impressive physically. You had a lot of guys that maybe other teams passed on, or somehow you guys.
Jerry Rice.
Yeah.
John Taylor.
Somehow you guys found a way to become one of the greatest teams of all time. What was it about you that made you so unique?
Well, chemistry, the locker room. You look at the New England Patriots and how they're able to be consistent at this day and age of the salary cap and everything. Tom Brady keeps redoing his contract to make room for them to bring in people. The leadership in the locker room, it's not about you. Whenever there's a player that thinks about himself, you're starting to lose a little bit of that edge to be a world champion. And it's the locker room that's the key.
What's the one thing you'd give advice-wise to the players playing in this game on Sunday? Is there one piece that you have to pass that along to the players who are going to be in Levi's Stadium?
You played this game since you were 10 years old to get here. No regrets on Monday. Let it go. I mean, you're in there for 60 minutes to become the best in the world, and nobody can ever take that away from you.
Jeff, we've got a couple of minutes left.
Yeah, I want to talk about something. You know, you see this jacket that Jesse's wearing. Now, you see the yellow Hall of Fame jackets around today, but this Hall of Fame jacket maybe to me means a little more than those yellow ones. And it's the Polynesian Football Hall of Fame. Jesse, you're a Polynesian Football Hall of Famer. Talk to us about what it means to you as a Polynesian man.
Well, it means a lot because we went back to Samoa in the 80s. And it was unheard of that we would ever have kids from Samoa come straight here and go to college. Now we have over 400 Division I Polynesian players. We have over 70 playing in the National Football League. 2 are playing this week. The Polynesian Football Hall of Fame is a forum that allows us to pay respect to the pioneers, connect them with the present players like Troy Polamalu just went in, and have the future generation be motivated and appreciate those guys that knocked down those walls for them to get it to where we are today.
All right, now, you know my background and you know how much I love the Polynesian kids. It's statistically proven that a young man in Pongo Pongo, Samoa has a better chance to play in the NFL than a kid walking the streets in Dallas, Texas. Why is that, Jess?
Well, because it's very common to be 16 years old and 275 pounds.
It's genetics.
Well, it's genetics. It's the food that we eat. You know, sometimes most of us are 6'2", 6'1", but when you find a 6'4", 6'5 kid, they're 270 pounds as 10th graders. And that's a very normal look, you know, to all of us. So it's nothing surprising about that. You know, here in America, you look at a kid, and you say, wow, that kid is pretty big. In Samoa, you're pretty average.
Yeah, but you know what? Talk about the culture, about how a kid grows in Samoa and how important respect and those qualities that sometimes we take for granted.
Well, we'll build a wrong family. And every family has lives in the village. Every village has have chiefs. Yeah. So it's a protocol that goes down. And it's a lot similar to team sports, you know, and respect is the number one thing that's very, very important to us in the islands. Well, the head coach to us is a chief. Right. Comes normal to us. You know, and we keep our fingers crossed, but you rarely see any Polynesian kids get in trouble because our name that we carry on our back means a lot to us. We're carrying our whole family with us on our backs.
And you certainly carried it all the way to the Super Bowl, not once, not twice, not three times, but four times. You've set a new record from this stage this week with the most Super Bowl titles. Our thanks to Jesse Sapolo. So we are looking ahead to Super Bowl 50 on Sky Sports 1 and Sky Sports 3. Kickoff is at 11:30 on Sunday night. We're on air from about 10 o'clock from Levi's Stadium. It's the Denver Broncos against the Carolina Panthers. Okay, our guests are coming thick and fast on the Inside the Huddle podcast. Very pleased to be joined by my old friend, our old friend, Henry Hodgson, the editor of NFL.com. The Brits are taking over
the
radio.
The people's choice. They didn't ask for anybody except for NFL.
We were going to get Joe Namath. Joe Montana was going to come. We said no. We want.
Well, it makes sense. You've had Pro Bowl receivers and tight ends. You've had super agents, and now this. No Super Bowl rings for me. But
so the first question I have to ask, because I'm obviously very jealous. A, you live on a beach or close to a beach now. B, you get to probably play catch with Kurt Warner at lunchtime. So I want to know, who is your most famous friend at the NFL Network?
Oh, I don't know about that. I think...
None of them like you?
No, exactly. I think that might be the problem. I'll describe them as friends, but I'm not sure they'd say the same thing. No, they're all great. They're all wonderful to work with.
You don't want to drop any names, but please, go on. Drop names. I drop names left, right, and center, so you might as well.
I can't. You know, Dave Damashek. I don't know if you've heard of the Dave Damashek football program. Dave, I think, probably. That's the name I'll drop. That's the easiest one.
Look at him. He's like hawking his products like all these players on radio.
He's, like, he's just a veteran of radio. He's a veteran of Radio Row.
I should be wearing Where's like your, a
Yeah, exactly.
Jeff. Has he changed?
He has changed. You know, what happened to the humble Henry, you know?
But he isn't naming names, so he's still being humble. But we should actually just point out that this great set that we've had, all the help we've had from NFL Network this week, has all come from Henry, so it's much appreciated.
That is actually not true. I asked for it, and these guys out there who won't put the camera in front of themselves are the ones that did it, so they're the ones that deserve the credit.
Henry, all joking aside, it is an amazing journey that you've been on, really. From a university kid who starts just being an intern in the NFL UK offices, and here you are as the director or a man, or whatever you are, president of whatever. I'm gonna give you a bigger title, but you run all the NFL.com stuff, and you're living in LA. Do you ever pinch yourself and go, "Is this really happen to me?"
Yes, I do very often, and especially on days like today when you find yourself here. And just as I came down to talk to you guys, Joe Namath is standing there, and there's all kinds of craziness going on. So yeah, of course, every day I think you realize how lucky you are to be doing it, and how lucky I am that people like you guys help me to get here and do what I'm doing.
What about the Super Bowl week? Has it been obviously very, very busy for you? But how do you think both teams have coped with it?
It seems like they both are eager to play the game now. We're talking on Friday, and it seems, you know, kind of since Media Day, you know, every time they go back in front of the media, it feels like they're answering the same questions again, and really they just want to get on the field.
You know, it's time, Henry. It's time for us to play the game. And everybody back in the UK, I know, is sitting on pins and needles for this very moment where you are going to predict your Super Bowl champion.
I'm picking the Panthers. I've been picking the Panthers since, I don't know, about week 14, and I'm going to keep going with them. I think they'll win. I think 3 weeks ago, if this game had been played, it would be more of a blowout. But I think I'll go for something like a 27-17 win for the Panthers.
All right, I'm glad you're up here, Henry, because we've been asking people their favorite moments all week about the Super Bowl. And because I'm British and we like to have a moan, I gave my pet hate. So come on, you're another Brit on the stage. Right. This can't all be perfect. There must be something about the Super Bowl that gets your goat.
That's a tough one.
That's not on here, by the way.
He's lived in L.A. too much. It's like, it's all good.
That's not on my list. My list is all right. I wasn't on there, so I've thrown them away.
Throw it away. I don't know. I don't feel like there's anything bad about Super Bowl week. I think there can be a point where, you know, the two teams were decided, whatever it is now, 13 days ago. It does feel a little bit. Some games, there are some great storylines, and you know, they go on. Yeah. And then sometimes there's really just not a whole lot to say, and it's like, let's just play the game. And that's why I'm excited for Sunday to come, because we'll get to find out what's actually going to happen.
Now I feel bad. No, so it's just me then, isn't
it? Yeah, it really is.
Yeah, it is really kind of you. I didn't want to say anything, but
I have a problem. I love it, really. I love all of it. What about the, you know, obviously the off-season? We always say there is no off-season. Once we get past the Super Bowl, you're still going to have a lot going on. I guess you go straight into Combine, draft prep.
Yeah, I actually had a meeting this morning about Combine and trying to work out some content for Combine. And then free agency is always one of my favorite times of the year, because my favorite team, your favorite team, the Miami Dolphins, three times free agency champions.
We always win the off-season.
Yeah, yeah. Free agency champions.
Fellas, you gotta understand.
You don't get any rings
yeah,
for that,
exactly. That's exactly how many Rimless. Rings. That you got exactly. as many rings as the Dolphins exactly. have.
That's about right. Henry, we thank you for joining us. Great to see you here.
Good to see you, my friend.
Just before we say goodbye, of course, I lied earlier this week when I said this is the first video podcast of Inside the Huddle, because that's how it all started, didn't it?
Me sitting with a box on my lap and a camera on top of the box, filming you, yeah. Mike Carlson, and whoever else would show up.
Brilliant.
We've come a long way. Neil's, we record sometimes out of the bathroom because we have no
I recorded out of the storeroom the other week, so it's not that luxurious. But Henry Hodgson, great to see you having so much success. We wish you all the best, and thanks for joining us today. So we are looking ahead to Super Bowl 50 on Sky Sports 1 and Sky Sports 3. It's the Denver Broncos against the Carolina Panthers. Okay, time for our final guest on today's very busy Inside the Huddle. We're very pleased to be joined by a Super Bowl champion and an All-Pro and Pro Bowl center for the Minnesota Vikings and Baltimore Ravens, Matt Burke. And Matt, first of all, you got to do what so few get to do. You left this game on your own terms. You did that riding off into the sunset and won that Super Bowl.
It certainly helps you when you're a veteran player. You might not always know when it's time.
Yeah.
And then when you're late in your career like I was and won a Super Bowl, I thought, you know what, it's just not going to get any better. I better not press my luck, so I'm going to retire.
Matt, take us through that decision to go to Baltimore. You're a Minnesota kid. You're playing for your hometown team. And at the end of your career, you make a decision to make a radical change to go to Baltimore.
I wasn't necessarily looking to leave. I mean, because it was good. I was from there. I'd been in with the team for 11 years. You know, after every home game, I'd come out. My family, my friends were all there. I mean, it was great. But it was kind of time. I'd gotten very comfortable there. And I'm glad I took one free agent visit. I went to Baltimore. Wasn't necessarily looking to leave, but I sat across from John Harbaugh. And after about a half hour talking to him, I said, you know, there's something special about this guy. Everything he's saying is how I believe. I mean, those are my beliefs. We see the game the same way. We see how a team should be. We agree with that. And I thought, you know what, this just feels right. And if I don't jump at this opportunity, I might regret it.
Matt, we look through the years. We'll be quite reflective this week because it's the 50th Super Bowl. We look back at all of the iconic moments and, you know, a great game. The Baltimore-San Francisco Super Bowl was a great game, but we will remember it as well for the lights going out. I mean, what was that like in the heat of battle for the lights to go out for, what was it, 34 minutes, I think?
You know, I know that's like maybe the weirdest thing that's ever happened during a Super Bowl, but when you're playing, you are so locked in, and it's almost like it almost doesn't faze you because you just have this laser focus, and I remember thinking, well, it's the Super Bowl. It's New Orleans. I guess anything can happen. And the lights going out, okay. Yeah, unfortunately, the lights went out, and they came back on, and then And then San Francisco mounted a furious comeback and almost caught us. So.
Yeah, their lights went on.
They did.
You know, Matty, you look at these two teams, and sometimes it's the intangibles, the leadership things that come down to being the deciding factor in a team winning. You had great leadership on your Ravens teams. Ray Lewis on defense, you on offense. When you look at these two teams, who do you think has that little edge that way?
You know, it probably Denver. I mean, obviously Peyton, but you have a DeMarcus Ware there who's been and different than Peyton, a veteran, respected, but has never been to a Super Bowl and can speak to the younger guys that, hey, these opportunities don't come around
right.
very often. And obviously there's going to be a lot of change on that team in the offseason. But leadership really helps you during the season because there's going to be downs. You know, Carolina didn't have many downs this year, but they overcame a lot of adversity, and they did a tremendous job. Leadership helps you navigate through the ups and downs of the season, and you get in the playoffs. And then, you know, the Super Bowl, it's a one-game tourney. And, you know, does the best team always win? You know, I don't know, but they usually win. But, you know, I think leadership really helps you get to that point and kind of helps have the team have the right mindset going into, you know, the biggest game in the world. Having their mindset right that the team's going to go out and play their best game.
All right, now take us through – we've been through the media – we've had the media circuses at the team hotels. Now they're starting to lock themselves away and really starting to find focus on the game. Take us through what a player is experiencing now, between now and game day.
I think you're just insulating yourself. I think most of the guys, when I played, and that's what I did as well, you just insulate yourself. You're not turning on the TV. You're not going on the internet and reading about what's going on. You're just, you're living in a cocoon. You're checking on your family, making sure they're all right. And then you're making sure you have the game plan down pat, which, by the way, in the Super Bowl, the game plans are pretty basic. I mean, these teams know, they know who they are.
Yeah.
The other team knows who they are. They're not going to come out and radically change. I mean, both these teams had a lot of success. You know, they're going to do what they do best. It's not going to be a secret. And it's really going to come down to execution. But you just make sure that you don't get caught up in all the hype. You know, you're a player. You know these opportunities don't come around all the time. So you say, hey, I'm not going to really enjoy this Super Bowl until it's over.
Let's talk about your role now with the NFL. You've made that transition from player into the front office as NFL Director of Player Development. I know the NFL does so much for players, looking at helping them get into second careers, broadcast boot camps, entrepreneur boot camp type things. Tell us how important that is and what your role is at the NFL.
Yeah, we're really trying to get players at all continuums. I mean, youth, high school, college, professional, and post-career,
right.
You know, and the entire life cycle. So there's a lot of things that we can do, I think, to help support our guys, especially post-career. You know, a lot of them, since they've been a very young age, their goal has been a football player. They've trained, they've been very good at football.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you're 25 or 30 years old, and you're done, and you probably didn't end the career on your terms. Most people are told
right.
you're done. And now you've spent all your whole life focusing and developing this one skill, and now it's not useful to you anymore. But there are a lot of things that you learn playing football that can serve you in your second career. And most people are only asked to have one good career.
Right.
We ask our guys to have two. So we try to build on that, build on these skills and these qualities that you learn playing football. We have a whole suite of programs to try to hit on all the different interests of our players.
And do you reach out to players throughout their careers? I'm thinking, obviously, at the moment, Johnny Manziel is making headlines. There's concerns over Johnny. Does the league, does your department, do you kind of reach out to players that are looking like they may? I mean, Johnny's dad said that he needs help.
There's programs in place kind of at every step. You know, before guys come, yeah. guys that we kind of feel like their behavior is a little bit high risk before they come in to the league. I think right now Johnny's at the point where he does need help. I mean, he needs professional help.
Yeah.
Hopefully he has a close inner circle that can talk to him, that can get to him and make him realize that it's not about football anymore.
Sure.
It's about life right now
yeah.
for him.
Right.
Matt, you know, we come from the NFL Europe experience. Both Neil and I started our pro careers that way. You know, there's always talk about a developmental league, a need for the NFL to continue to develop players because it's so difficult for young players to make it in the NFL now, especially because the way the OTAs, mini camps, training camps have changed. We need better quarterback play in the National Football League because it's a quarterback-centric game. Is there anything out there on the horizons in terms of developmental league?
I think the last few years that discussion is being had more and more. because of those reasons you just said, and because the college game now, this spread game, you're seeing more teams in the NFL run spread, but not everybody. So you're getting quarterbacks, you're getting linemen, you're getting tight ends, you're getting even they're way behind in their development when they get to the NFL because they're kind of playing a different game. So it's definitely resonating more and more. And coaches, especially with the changes in the last CBA, coaches are saying we need more time with these guys to develop them. So hopefully we see something, whether that's be a change in the offseason rules or some type of academy development league or program, because it's important. You know, we need to put our resources behind the most important resource we have, and that's the players.
That's the players. I think it was really interesting what you say, because John Masco said to me yesterday, the offensive line coach for Carolina, said, Jeff, we're getting kids now that come into the National Football League and never been in a three-point stance. Offensive linemen had never gotten their hand on the ground.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially early on this year, what I thought you saw was very few teams were running the ball effectively for that very point. You know, they're just used to pass setting 50 times a game. Tight ends are basically like hybrid wide receivers in a lot of college programs now. And also, too, with the way that coaches are really taking over, you know, you see it now in the college game. Teams line up and they look over to the sideline for the play.
Right.
Quarterbacks don't have to process. Yeah. They're not like Peyton Manning. They're not reading defenses and calling plays. It's kind of like a video game, and they're just looking over and doing what the coach tells them.
Of course, NFL Europe showed players who could play, and it showed who couldn't play as well, which was important to the league because you had players that you could clear out once you got them in that game environment.
You're exactly right. You know, you can practice all you want, you're in the classroom all you want, but how does a guy...
You got to play the game.
How does he do in games? When the bullets are real,
right.
How does he react?
Plays,
and that, and for a young player, you might not always get that opportunity. So that's why NFL Europe was such a great thing. And not just for players, for coaches, for officials, for trainers. We were able to develop a lot of personnel. Just someone who cares a lot about the game. I think it's important, and I'm very hopeful that we're going to bring something back to that effect where we can do that again.
You know, you sit in the offices in New York, you watch the game growing around the world, and you and I had breakfast last year at the Super Bowl, and what you said really resonated with me about the need for young guys to play this game, because there are things that you learn on the football field that you just can't get in life.
There's no question. I mean, anybody that's played or coached or been around or experienced it knows that it's not just a game. It's really an institution that helps form young men. And, you know, I mean, I had two great parents who I owe everything to. But after that, it was the game of football. You know, you just can't. You talk about, oh, in life, when you get knocked down, get back up. Well, that's a metaphor. But
if you never get knocked
down,
that
really happens,
exactly.
You know. And you know what? For me, I look back. I said, look, you know, I'm not the smartest guy or the most talented guy. But whatever I do next in life, I know this. I know I've done things that most people wouldn't be willing to try. Wouldn't be willing to do. I can do more than I think I can. I learned that through football. And so nothing's going to be too tough for me. And that's a great way to enter into, you know, whether it's professional or things in your personal life.
Right.
You'll be glad to know, Matt, that there's a blossoming league in the UK. People pay to play the game. There are kids on Sunday mornings from 8 years old dabbing like Cam Newton, trying to catch like Odell Beckham. I mean, the game is growing.
Well, that's great. You know, in the NFL, I mean, that might be their first exposure to it.
Yeah.
You know, but for long-term success and sustainability, we need to make sure that at the NFL level, that we're doing everything we can to equip the coaches over there, the youth coaches, to help develop the players.
Here. So we thank you for joining us. It's been a very busy day. But, Jeff, how do we always say goodbye over to you, Coach?
Aloha.